So this session is a short history of economic thought with Michael Lazarus. Michael is preparing a PhD on Marx's economic thought?
Social thought.
And he contributed an article to the last edition of the Marxist Left Review, which is Socialist Alternatives Theoretical Journal, about Marx 200 years after his birth. So Michael will talk for 30 minutes or so, and then we'll have, you know the deal. We'll have time for discussion afterwards. So, yeah, take it away.
Awesome. Thanks, Pam. All right, so this talk is conceptual history of economic theory interpreted and explained through Karl Marx's critique of political economy. And so for this reason, I'm going to focus on the thought directly preceding Marx and his prolonged analysis of Adam Smith and David Ricardo. So this the purpose of this talk is not so much to outline a kind of a linear narrative of economic thought up till today, but with the kind of summary evaluation as I go along, but instead to provide a sense of what's happening in Marx's thinking and what's useful. So this approach looks and investigates what's happening conceptually in Marx's work, and from here how we might understand economic thought and capitalism more generally. Marx's critique of political economy provides a basis for thinking beyond economics, and in this thinking, I think there provides substantial resources for a critique of the barriers of emancipatory to emancipatory political action, which are represented in the economic categories presented by the thought of political economy. So Marx, very explicit about this project. He describes his project as a critique of political economy, and this is the subtitle of Capital. So what is conceptual history of Marx's thought? First, I think this means kind of identifying the key conceptual categories that operate in this project. So I take from Marx the form determinations, commodity, money, and capital, which are the fundamental categories in Marx's view of a value-producing society, which is the specific form of wealth in capitalism. In talking about commodities as the things we use and things we trade, money as the equivalence of trade, and capital as the social relationship between things, we can start to understand what Marx means by value. And this concept really separates Marx from his predecessors and sets up really what sets him apart from economic thought since. It's the crucible of his social theory. And so in turn, these three categories, the commodity, money, and capital, shine a light on the difference between Marx and political economy. He transforms from political economy, that a historical conception of wealth creation, and develops what he calls critical categories for understanding what is specific about capital social relations. And so the structure of this talk will follow this structure as presented in the very early sections of Capital Volume 1. So from commodity to money, from money to capital. And so with this movement in mind, importantly, Marx's categories need to be associated with and developed with the forms of thought that Marx is criticising, Smith and Ricardo mainly. So this really depends on recognising a particular type of methodological feature of Marx's work, and that's immanent critique. And this is a form of critique that looks within the internal dynamics of a particular mode of thinking. It examines it in its own terms and probes those categories in an effort to test and move beyond their limits. Marx doesn't simply invent his own conceptions to apply to Smith and Ricardo, but he probes within their concepts and historicizes their thought at a higher level with more complexities. And this method, in one sense, borrows from other thinkers, but radically develops their insights and overcomes conceptually with substantially different meaning. So Marx draws a very wide range of economic thinkers, including Aristotle, as early as Aristotle, in his a discussion of justice and reciprocal exchange in Nicomachean Ethics. But what I really want to focus on is economic thought in this talk is the type of thought that wants to understand capitalism as a specific historical moment. And it's really with the transition from manufacture to industrial capitalism observed by Smith and Ricardo where generalized commodity exchange starts to be theorized explicitly, and with it a specialized division of labor and a concentration in factory production. So Smith understands modern society as commercial society, and comprises classes, in his view, the capitalist, the wage laborer, and the landowners. And he shifts the understanding of what determines economic value from the earlier ideas of the physiocrats, which tended to associate value with land, to human labour. And just to give a brief historical account, between the English Revolution in the mid to late 17th century and the French Revolution of the late 18th, the victory of the bourgeoisie over the aristocracy was accompanied by the growth and the prominence of industrial capitalism. And so as this world process starts to be established, the opposition between classes becomes increasingly modern. And the division between industrial capitalists and wage labourers, hired labourers, becomes evident. And with this, a particularly complex division of labour in industrial production, an increase in size of industry, and a rapidly increased sense of problems within the labour process. And no thinker really before Marx understood the depth of this crisis as much as Hegel did. And this, in the philosophy of right, he outlines that the abstract right of private property conditions a particular type of relationship, one of alienation. So in his first quote, he writes, "I can alienate individual products of my particular physical and mental skills and active capabilities to someone else and allow him to use them for a limited time. Because provided they are subject to this limitation, they acquire an external relationship to my totality and universality. By alienating the whole of my time, as made concrete through work and the totality of my production, I would be making the substantial quantity of the latter, i.e. my universal activity and actuality, or my personality itself, into someone else's property." So Hegel recognises at this point that individuals, as citizens of the state, are separated from their status, but it's connected to another status as private persons who have their own interests at end and are in a form of competition. So Marx is very influenced by this type of idea and takes that there's something alienated in the existence of private property as he finds it. But he dramatically expands how this comes from the labour process itself. But there's important similarities with the idea that that Hegel develops in 1830 to what Marx there's still a presence of that in Capital. And so we see in the second quote from Capital, which is published in 1867, "Things are in themselves external to man and therefore alienable. In order that this alienation may be reciprocal, it is only necessary for men to tactically agree to treat each other as private owners of those alienable things, and precisely for that reason, as persons who are independent of each other." So I think this the closeness, the importance of Hegel to Marx is in some ways summarised in a comment that Gramsci makes, that Marx equals Hegel plus David Ricardo. So Marx's focuses his interest upon thinkers that best understand capitalism at this crucial mode of crucial period of its formation. So Smith, writing on the onset of industrialization, and Ricardo at its decisive conciliation. And so in this way, Marx claims classical political economy belongs to a period in which the class struggle was as yet undeveloped. Its last great representative, Ricardo, ultimately and consciously made the antagonism of class, interests, of wages and profits and rent, the starting point of his investigations, naively taking this antagonism for a social law of nature. But with this contribution, the bourgeois science of economics had reached the limits beyond which it could not pass. Already in Ricardo's lifetime, and its opposition to him, was met by criticisms in the person of Saint-Simonie. So in this passage, Marx hints at a really particularly crucial aspect of his critique of political economy, which is the ahistorical rendering of capitalist social relations as something internal and a social law of nature. At the same time, Marx kind of historically relates the political victory of the bourgeoisie with the disintegration of the insights of economic thought, which become increasingly concerned with defending or concealing specific aspects of economic theory, rather than trying to understand the social system as a whole. And so in this way, Marx's second quote from Latto in the same section, in place of disinterested inquirers, there stepped prize fighters. In place of genuine scientific research, the bad conscious and evil intent of apologists. Okay, so now I'm going to talk a little bit about the commodity. So Marx opens Capital with this first quote, that the wealth in capitalist society appears as an immense collection of commodities, each individual commodity appearing in its elementary form. So from the very start of Capital, Marx is making clear that he's trying to categorise what is specific about capitalism, taking the commodity as the most general category of capitalism, and he's asking what is it about commodity production which leads to the creation of particular appearances, and the commodity as an appearance that he wants to start with. So he's really, from the very get-go, he's doing something very different to kind of economics or history traditionally conceived. He's doing social theory by a different name. So he's talking about appearance. Marx is going to say that appearance is located in essence. And this isn't to suggest that the appearance of a commodity is real, but it's to kind of follow this kind of mode of abstract thinking that Hegel kind of pioneers, to say that appearances are relationally bound to essences. And a moment of its expression of both appearance and essences are vital aspects of social reality that can't be held apart. So appearance doesn't come from nowhere, but is related to real processes, or is a real process in and of itself. So what Marx is doing by starting with the commodity is not to say what comes first in capitalist society historically, but what comes logically first. So the most basic unit of commodity production, of commodity producing society, i.e. a mode of production predicated on commodity manufacture and exchange, begins with the commodity. And this commodity expresses two moments of value, use and exchange. Okay, so according to quite a lot of mainstream economic theory, Marx simply is seen to accept the what classical political economy called the labour theory of value. And so Smith had kind of sought to provide an account of economic value from the amount of labour needed for the production of commodities. And so there's kind of two main controversies that come out of this. First, it flies in face of what many understandings of value is conceived to be. So many people would say, I value this or that object, I value these trousers, I like them, they're precious to me, that kind of thing. But this tells us very little apart from personal preference. It tells us nothing about how commodities are traded, i.e. what gives them value in a social system. So I think in this sense, value has to be something which is much more than a basic utility of the thing, but you can't say something expresses value just by its price and how that varies. So in this sense, the idea, the value is created by sound investments, by buying high and selling low, by demand for a particular object, as opposed to simply the utility of the object. And so to think about a typical example about how price is usually seen to equate simply to value, we can think of the kind of the tweed-wearing people of Antiques Roadshow. Here we've got an example of one of the highest-selling or highest-valued items to appear on the show, some horn-rimmed cups. And so the kind of the way that, if anyone has seen the show before, the way it goes, usually there's this valuer, they look at what someone's brought to them and they say, oh, this is very nice. Do you know it's actually, its value is this? And the audience member usually gives some kind of shock look. The expression here, it's worth 1.5 million. Yeah, he's quite shocked. I like his shirt as well. So there's this kind of sense, when you watch a show like this, the kind of the way that prices or the way the value is expressed is as something that's totally accidental. Some weird, wacky things can have this fantastic value just because of their rareness, because of their because of the absurdity of their price. But if value is seen to be just about the price of individual articles for exchange, then we know very little about how commodities are produced and circulated in a market. So Marx wants to go much further than saying that things are valuable because, one, we can use them, or two, that they have a price for exchange, although the use and exchange are both moments in the form of the commodity. Marx sees exchange value as a form of appearance of value and seeks to locate an understanding of value in the socially measurable substance of human labour. So Marx suggests that commodities are given social weight by the amount of human labour objectified in their production. Okay, so in this sense, there's a second controversy that comes out of Marx's value theory. And this is the critique in the way that this particular conceptualization varies from Smith and Ricardo, who argue value is in the material manifestation of labour inputs and the amount of labour that's put in. So Marx understands value, I think, in a significantly different way, not as a material property of a commodity, but as a social relation in which things mediate, material things mediate. So this is what Marx means when he says, we may twist and turn a commodity as we wish, it remains impossible to grasp it as a thing possessing value. However, let us remember that commodities possess an objective character as values only insofar as they are expressions of identical social substance, human labour. Their objective character as values as therefore purely social. And so, if we look at another Antiques Roadshow example, a quote that loses all value of touch, we kind of get a sense of, kind of what Marx means. If we twist and turn a commodity, the value can't be seen as something you hold. It's a social relationship. And so I'm pushing a little bit more on this. Philosophers usually talk about tables, that's their kind of favourite example, and political economists talk about cloth and coats. So we'll use these examples to flesh it out. Smith writes that the woolen coat is the produce of the joint labour of the great multitude of workmen, the shepherd, the sword of the wool combiner or carder, the dryer, the scribbler, the spinner, the weaver, the fuller, the dresser, with many others, must all join their different areas in order to compete, even with this homely production. How many merchants and carriers, besides, must have been employed in transporting the materials from some of those workmen to others who often live in a very distant part of the country? What variety of labour, too, is necessary in order to produce tools of the meanest of these workmen? The miner, the builder, the furnace, the smelting the ore, the fellow of the timber, the burner of the charcoal, to be made all in the use of the smelting house, the brickmaker, the bricklayer, the workmen who attend the furnace, the wheelwright, the forger, the smith, must all of them join their different arts in order to produce them. So Smith's theory of value, labour theory of value, was a means to account for the price of the commodity by starting with the amount of labour expended in its production. The woolen coat requires not just a detailed division of labour in its production, but a great variety of different labours to bring the materials together and a variety of labours in the means of production themselves. So Smith theorises that the technical aspects of the labour process to promote the most productive and efficient form of theorisation of commodity production. And within this, there's a sense that there's a freedom of trade and the invisible hand of the market forces are given priority. And economic factors for Smith, and this is one of his unique contributions to economic thought, are given priority over casual explanations. But at the same time, there's a social theory that underpins Smith's work. Humans are seen to be egotistical, driven by their own particular interest, and commercial society, in Smith's view, is natural, since it allows humans to trade as will. And he sees the division of labouring tasks for self-interested purposes as a feature of the earliest types of society. So he writes that by charter, by barter, and by purchase, we trade with each other mutually needed goods. And so he goes as far to claim that in hunter and gatherer societies, where people make bows and arrows, for example, those people who demonstrated a greater capacity for the task became armourers. And it was the interest within those primitive societies for that to happen, for people to become sort of armourer, and specialised professions happen in the earliest forms. So Smith's coat is given value by labour production, and he gives significant attention to the material and technical division of labour, but insists that the division in capitalist production can be read back to all forms of society. So there's a confusion here between the technical and the social division of labour. And Marx points out that in the earliest communal societies, there is a social division of labour, but no commodity production. By contrast, in modern commodity-producing societies, labour is systematically divided in every factory, but the worker do not bring about this division by exchanging their individual products. Only the products of mutually independent acts of labour performed in isolation can confront each other as commodities. So this particular division is needed for commodity production to occur. And so he writes in the quote here, men make clothes for thousands of years under the compulsion of the need for clothing without a single man ever becoming a tailor. But the exercise of coats, of linen, of every element of material wealth not provided in advance by nature had always to be mediated through a specific productive activity appropriate to its purpose, a productive activity that assimilated particular natural materials to particular human requirements. And so Ricardo begins his principles of political economy and taxation with a critique of Adam Smith and his discussion of value. He says Smith fails to find a consistent measure of value, and that the quantity of labour necessary to produce a particular object. Sometimes Smith talks of food grain, and other times as labour as a standard measure. And so Ricardo, very explicitly, aims to provide a precise explanation of value in the labour contained in commodities. If two capitalists employ the same quantity of labour per year for commodity production, the commodities will be of different value. And Ricardo writes, on account of the different quantities of fixed capital or accumulated labour employed by each respectively, the cloth and cotton goods are of the same value because they are the produce of equal quantities of labour and equal quantities of fixed capital, but corn is not the same value as these commodities because it is produced as far as regards fixed capital under different circumstances. So Ricardo's coat is given value by the amount of labour time contained in the commodity. And so this particular innovation, the addition of time, although hugely significant, is often seen to be Marx's position. And at first sight, this seems to be supported by Ricardo's starting point. He says he wants to look at the division between use and exchange value in the same way, and the abstraction that causes in labour time. And Marx's similar starting point of capital is often seen to kind of equate the two. The Marx just modifies his position. But I think very clearly Marx creates a clear separation between what he's doing and what happens in the political economy from the first sentence, that the commodity is the expression of value as the elementary form of capitalist wealth. And so the importance of this move is lost in many of Marx's commentators, who just assume that in following Ricardo's position and kind of adding one or two things there, Marx's labour theory of value is just another expression of political economy. But what Marx does is locating value as a social form, he's doing something very different from political economy. And instead of just seeing value as all form labour, he instead understands value as a social relation. And he puts this particularly clearly when he writes, Political economy has indeed analysed value in its magnitude, however incompletely, and has uncovered the content concealed within these forms. But it has never once asked the question why this content has assumed that particular form, that is to say, why capital is the expression in value, and why the measurement of labour by its duration is expressed in the magnitude of the value of the product. So Marx thinks that Ricardo comes closest, but political economy as a whole is unable to think the difference between labour and labour power. He notes that it does not occur to the economists that a purely quantitative distinction between the kinds of labour presupposes their quantitative unity or quality, and there the reduction to abstract human labour. So in this sense, and to break that down, Marx argues that political economy is unable to grasp the difference between labour as the feature of human activity and labour power as the feature of labour capacity sold to the capitalist for a determinate period of time, and the abstract nature that comes from that. This distinction between the two allows Marx to think about labour power as something abstract, timed, measured, and alienated. By selling their labour power as time, abstract labour, the worker sells their commodity for the exchange value of their wage. Marx finds in this process a form of fetishization, where the products of human labour mediate social relations and mask real relations. So Marx's starting point is the movement from the abstract to the concrete is not abstract in the sense of intangible factor of human thought, but a real abstraction. In grasping the most basic unit of capital, the commodity, it is then possible to add more determinations. So in this sense, Marx's starting point has two points of departure, the individual commodity and the form of value, which is the fetishized expression of social labour. So with this in mind, I think then we're able to understand Marx's detailed exposition in the early sections of Capital, with the value of the linen and the coat, and these are the sections which often readers of Capital kind of stop at. It seems to be this metaphysical presentation. The linen and the coat, the products of objectified labour by the weaver and the tailor, are shown in relation. Marx traces how, from the most simple relation, the form of value expresses two poles, what he calls a relative and equivalent form of value. And this, he says, is the whole mystery of the form of value. So he develops this example by showing how the objectified labour in both linen and coats can only be expressed relatively, i.e. in another economy, in another commodity, so the linen, when it becomes the coat. So when this is related, there's 20 yards of linen to one coat, there's a value that's expressed in this moment. At the same time, the linen expresses its use value in the coat, a value quite distinct from its physical form and becomes abstracted, measurable and made quantifiable and exchangeable for the creation of coats. Marx understands this expression of value in coats and linen purely in terms of social relations. So Marx has contends that human labour has become objectified and accumulated in the coat, which then bears its value. And so human labour provides the substance of value. The commodity embodies the dual character of labour. The linen had to be weaved by concrete labouring, and for it to express value, this activity had to be made its opposite, something that abstract, measurable, when compared with other commodities, and so then becomes socially measurable. Private labour, hired for the production of the commodity, can therefore only be understood as a social form when commodities are no longer seen individually, but as citizens of the world. And this kind of relates to the earlier slide I had with the kind of collection of commodities. Every commodity is seen to be a citizen of the world. Okay, so the problem of how these commodities relate to each other in value kind of arises to the next category, the category of money. The problem which Marx sees is how to give these values equivalency. And so in the money form, he calls this the universal equivalent. It gives social validity to the social process of commodity exchange. Money takes a social role, expressing what he says is a form of appearance of value. For Smith, money acts as a means to mediate the trade of commodities. Smith understood money to be the means of the truck, the barter, and the exchange. for individuals to trade commodities for other individuals. So money, Smith, plays just a transitory role, just something to circulate other commodities and commodities as products of labour. And this is kind of often represented as the circuit. Commodity, money, commodity. A quite simple circuit. So Ricardo theorises money as a commodity itself. He describes the money commodity as the gold standard, but fails to see money as a social relation which expresses the appearance of value. So he sees money as something quite distinct. Marx says that Ricardo found no connection between the value and the nature of money. So Marx wants to bring money into the equation. Like the commodity, Marx understands money to be a more concrete expression of value. But he carefully demarcates the difference between pre-capitalist forms of money, which act as a medium for the exchange of goods, like Smith had understood at a local level, and the form money takes in bourgeois society, which he thinks has a very specific function, which acts as this equivalent form of value in the generalised exchange and circulation of commodities and their subsequent accumulation. So gold and precious metals have often been linked to money, but to provide a particular use value, to stabilise economies, and so on. But money as a social relation provides a particular type of symbol. And it has recognition. Everyone knows what money is, everyone knows what money does. And in one section in Capital, Marx refers to the paper money used in the currency of the French Revolution, which provides a form of money not necessarily tied to the material value of the commodity money. So Marx understands the money form itself is something fluid, which can change. It can become credit, it can become paper, it can do all these things, but it still expresses value. And in this way, it rules the world. And so with the development of the money form early in Chapter 1, and Marx's introduction of the money form as what he calls the germ of the commodity form in the concept, the concept of commodity fetishism becomes particularly clear, and this is one of the most famous aspects of Marx's the early sections of Capital. And he introduces at this point, he says, after he's given an account of the role of the individual commodity, the way commodities are related to each other, the role that money plays, he can then describe how these things together form particular distortions in the way that humans relate to each other in a social system. And here, he's particularly clear that this provides a new form of domination. And the money form gives visibility to a particular type of set of social relations which hides the real products, the real way that labour is carried out, the way that people relate to each other in capitalist production, and mystifies it. The abstract nature of commodity production is given an abstract expression to the way that human relations appear, where things now are seen to mediate human relations. And this naturalises and fetishises the way that we think about the world. And money plays a particularly important role because it's both a measure of value and a standard of price, relatable to the trade of commodities in their role as abstract quantities. And price gives a money name to the ratio between different commodities, but does not express the value of commodity, the value of the commodity, only its exchange value. So there's something obscured at every step of the process for Marx. Okay, so Marx's concept of capital comes after he develops the commodity and money, the form of the commodity and money. In his view, capital is itself a form of value, which consists in the form of social labour specific to commodity production. Capital, in his words, realises itself, so it becomes capital, as it changes from one form to the next, appearing as money, and then as a commodity, and then again as exchange value, and then as use value. So capital appears at every stage of this process. According to Marx, each step of this process is the transition to the other. Capital is then posited as value in process, which is capital in every moment. So capital, as a concept, comes after the commodity and after money, but it is itself a process moving to money into commodity and back to money. And so this, in this it, particularly important to Marx in this sense, is the process of self-expansion that occurs. The amount of capital which expands as it accumulates as profit. The reason capital moves from money to commodity is not to satisfy the capitalist desire for a use value so much as a return to the capitalist, the initial capital plus a profit. So the circulation of commodities through successive stages changes the commodity into money, money into commodities, and this particular process, an opposed process, but a related one, means that it creates a particular type of circuit predicated on the sale and purchase of abstract labour expressed in each one of its various forms. And this is what this circuit represents. The sale of commodities for money and for capital, the sale of commodities for money and money for commodities hides the real relations of alienated labour and makes the products of human beings secondary to the sale and purchase of things. And so that's where money is what starts to become the real drive of the social system. Social power is found in the money commodity, and its power to expand is given priority as a kind of non-stop kind of form of accumulation. So what becomes particularly significant for Marx is no longer do we sell in order to buy, but we buy in order to sell. The generalised circulation of commodities allows capital to develop. And the cycle, MCM, expresses the need for capital to self-expand, to valorise itself as a social relation, where the movement of capital is limitless. Every barrier, every limit, every border seeks to be overcome in its motivation to accumulate. So in our particular social world, capital becomes everything. It becomes sort of absolute, a dominating aspect of social life, but at the same time, it's hard to pin down. It's nothing in itself. It forces human creative labour into alienated abstract modes of being which are obscured. Okay, so where political economy sees value as material property, Marx understands value as a social form, characterising specific, historically specific productive relations rather than the ahistorical form of accumulated wealth. So it's crucial to Marx's argument that commodities be seen as products of capital, and the creation of surplus value that arises from the capitalist production process is comprehended as a historically specific form of social interaction. Fundamentally for Marx, these questions are very much mystified by economic thought. In seeing capital as merely accumulated labour, Smith and Ricardo find capitalist production in all forms of human history. And Marx kind of satirises this using the example of Robinson Crusoe. We've got a picture here from a recent film. Love the wig. And also the byline, the greatest adventure of them all. But like for Marx, Robinson Crusoe is particularly significant because it kind of creates this mythology. The political economists read back into history this kind of sense of the capitalist in the, you know, he's removed from the rest of the world. He lives on an island by himself, but he's obsessed with his own ability to produce as a worker. He details every act of labour that he has. He times himself. He introduces a particular type of time specific to capitalist production, and he keeps accounts. He keeps money. He thinks himself as a capitalist, and it's important for Marx's critique to say that this kind of form of ideology is not just a creation of political economy, but it expresses a real modes of being, real types of social relations. Okay, so in this kind of the series of critiques that Marx makes and that are present in the early sections of Capital, what is important is that the inability of political economy to comprehend value as a social form means economic thought not only misunderstands the capitalist production process, but mystifies it. Marx's critique of political economy goes beyond economic thought in this sense, because he identifies why there's no remedy to the value form for the working class. So Ricardo had significant followers in the socialist movement at this time, Proudhon being one of them, who argued for such things as labour money as a way to abolish capitalist exploitation based on labour, on Ricardo's theory of value, so people just get paid for the amount of value that they produce. Marx maintains that no transformation along these lines can occur because it doesn't touch the existing relations of production and the social and their social basis. Capital form itself, to Marx, must be negated. Money can't just be abolished, but the forms that express this relation must be overcome themselves. And so here, I think, in these types of this type of conceptualization, Marx is much better able to comprehend the reality of the modern world. And he avoids collapsing into common sense ways of thinking about value, wealth and so on, wealth creation, which are increasingly unable to combat mainstream understandings of value. So, you know, and this in Marx's time was expressed in very simple oppositions like property as theft, which he saw as hypocritical, philistine, and anxiety-ridden, to use his words, because they didn't deal with the historically specific character of society and the way that that was historically contingent, dependent on forms that can't just be modified but must be negated. So in this way, I think Marx's critique of political economy is not only enduring as a critique of economic thought, but it is a really essential aspect of Marx's thinking as a whole. Thank you. Thank you.